Hi, this is Xavier Schley from the Build Alaska podcast series. We've discovered some previously recorded legacy videos that were produced for the Construction Industry Progress Fund to help capture the contribution of a generation of Alaskans to the construction industry. We've digitized these videos to help preserve their content and make them available to the public.
You're the man. Are you ready?
How come you don't grow up to be a little taller then you could look at that camera?
We're ready whenever you are. Roll.
Okay, Governor, this is just some questions regarding your involvement in the construction industry in Alaska and some background questions. What year did you come up here?
1940.
1940. How did you get to Alaska?
Well, I didn't walk, but I didn't have any money. I was in California, and the Golden Gloves had just started a few years before that. So I won the Golden Gloves Championship in Kansas, never been in a ring before in my life. It took me to Hobbs, New Mexico, won the final there. It took me to California, fought a California state champion. And I wanted to get to Australia. So I went down to the steamship coming in. Should I like to go to Australia? And this is in California. And I was born and raised in Kansas, little town, nine brothers and sisters. He says, well, let's see your passport. Passport? He says, yes, you got to have a passport. And I said, okay, I'll buy one. Well, you don't buy them, you apply for them. And he says, you got to fill this out. It'll take a little while to get that. And I said, well, where can I go without a passport and visa and all these things? And I wasn't quite 21 years old, just about. And they named Guam, Philippines, Virgin Islands, Panama Canal, the Hawaiian Islands. The last place they mentioned was Alaska. I never thought about it. And I said, well, how far up in Alaska can I go? This was in August, 1940. And he said, well, if you'd have come in here a couple of weeks ago, we could have taken you to Nome. He said, we can take you to Seward. I said, I'll go to Seward. And I didn't have any money or anything. And I said, he said, well, you get to Seattle. This is in Los Angeles, 1940. He says, and I'll see to you, you'll get to Seward. And so I got up to Seattle, and so they put me down by the engine room, you know. And they fed me two meals a day. And they put me in a hammock, and that hammock just, and that took me 7 days later, and I'll never forget when coming across it had a porthole about that big, and coming across the sound by Cordova, and I looked out of that window, and I saw this mountain, beautiful sky, the first November, wasn't cold, it was clear. And finally a lady saw me. She says, young man, you've got to come up here and take a look at this. She was way up, there's about 200-300 people on board that ship. And I said, well, I'm down. She says, I'll get you up here. And she kept me up there on about the second floor of the boat. It was coming into Cordova. I didn't know that. And they had those mountains there, you know. And I looked at them, I made a deal, simple as hell. I just looked up and I said, you take care of me and I'll take care of you. And he's kept his word and I've kept mine. And that's exactly how I made my commitment to Alaska. And I never was afraid. I got here, one guy gave me a sleeping bag. He knew I was this kid going someplace. And he said, when we got the sword, he said, young man, here's the sleeping bag. It's cold outside. You don't even have warm clothes on. And another guy who couldn't speak English, I don't remember his name, he heard about me. And he said, talk to me. And so he finally was a Polack. And he finally gave me $10 because the train left at 8 o'clock next morning. This was about 7 o'clock that night. And I didn't know his name or anything. And so I bought just a breakfast, stayed up all night. And a train ticket to Anchorage. That's how I like Anchorage, 37 cents. And so, you know, it's an amazing thing. And I saw that guy in September the next year on the street. And I handed him $20 back. And he was going, he wouldn't speak English or anything. But anyhow, that's how I got here, with 37 cents.
When you got up here, what was your first job?
Washing dishes.
Whereabouts? But...
Richmond's Cafe. $4 a day. And they fed me breakfast in the morning.
And then after that?
Richmond's Cafe was right across the street up here, about where First National Bank is, across the street over there. And the lady ran it, and that was my first job. And then Providence Hospital had just been built there not too long before that. And we had a hospital like that in Great Bend, Kansas, when I was a kid. And so I had no place to go, and it was always cold as hell. I was sleeping on the floor. A guy gave me a sleeping bag, I told you about, on an empty building on Fifth Avenue down there. Not Fifth and D, Fifth. And didn't have a wood stove in there, and that kept me from freezing to death. And that's where I slept until I got something a little better. And but that's how I got going in Anchorage, you know. And then, yes, I got a job at Richmond's. And then I went to, they had a hospital. And it was a, you know, and I was a Catholic. And I walked out that hospital. It was a long ways in Fifth Avenue. It was Providence Hospital out here. And I had a priest there by the name of, I'll think of his name in just a second. And I'm walking around the hospital. He said, "Young man, can I help you?" I said, "Well, no, I'm just looking around." So he took me in, showed me a lot of things. It was of the sheen. And anyhow, he finally listened to him, and he says, and he went to see a fellow by the name of Emil Vile. Never heard of him. And he told Emil he had this young boy. He needs a job. It's January 1941. And everybody was working down at the railroad in that time. Nobody get there in January, because January all the guys were working the winter. So he got me a job down at the railroad, and that's how I got started.
What did you do for the railroad?
Just I was a helper to the head boilermaker, Bill Cannon. I just did all the little things he wanted done, and I was lucky to get that job. But I'd have never made it without it.
How long did that last?
I stayed there until that fall, and I married a girl here, and I went to her back to Kansas. That's when I left there, and she died a couple of years. But anyhow, that's how I got started. My deal was, when I told you, you take care of me and I'll take care of you, he's kept his word and I've kept mine.
Then what year did you marry Irma Lee then?
Well, that was my first wife is Janice Cannon, and she knew Irma Lee, and she was the one that mentioned to me right before she died. Went outside, and a year later she got sick, and then 6 weeks later she was dead, and I had no money, I had no things, and I'll never forget. Right before she died, I'm sitting there, and she was just talking to herself. Didn't mean anything to me. And she talked about the Strutz girls as forum, because Janice was born here. And that Irma was such a nice girl. And I remembered when, after Janice died, I had taken her to Mayo Clinic. I was just a kid. But you didn't have to know kids with imaginations. I believed anything was possible. I took her to the Mayo Clinic, and they couldn't believe I was there with this kid, and put him in her. And 6 weeks later, she was dead, less than that. But anyhow, That's the story.
As I recall, you lived out on 26th Avenue there in a house. Did you build that house yourself over on
26th Avenue?
You and the kids, I remember years ago, you were
I built a house down there off of 15th. I bought a house. And 15th, and still there's a little old house. And that was right after I got married to Emily. And then I built the first house out behind Chilcoot Charlie's. I had four of them in there.
That's the one I was referring to.
Yeah.
Was that your first construction project?
That was my first project. And I didn't have any money, and I had never built a project before, but anything's possible if you believe.
And that went pretty well, and then?
I went and I built three, and then I built about five more, and then Emil Feil came to get me. His man lived in Downey. He had two city blocks out on 5th and K, not East K, K. And he wanted $500 a lot. I said, well, Emil, I worked for the railroad down there, but he's an old man. And I said, well, I'd buy him, but I can't pay it left to get the houses built. I'll give you $500 a lot, but I'm not going to pay it till I get them house. Then I can put a mortgage on them, you know. And so that's how I got about two blocks and a half from him, built 48 units out there. And then another guy came to me, Martin, Carl Martin. He had 10 acres out there, Northern Lights Shopping Center. He owned that 10 acres. I told him I'd buy him. How much you want for it? He did $500 a lot. I said, tell you what I'll do. I'll build 40 duplexes out there. I'll pay you for them after I get them built. But you got to let me build them until I get through. I got them through and put a mortgage on them, and that's how I bought that land. That's Northern Lights Shopping Center. So you get through, you win with ideas, but you have to believe. You got to believe in reality, and you got to have vision beyond tomorrow, or a year or 2 years, to see what's going on. And I've always done that. I've always had a good vision for it. That's why I built the Captain Cook after the earthquake, and that's why I've done Open Prudhoe Bay to drilling. They weren't going up there or anything like that. And vision is more powerful than money. And I was born with vision. My mother saw that.
After the earthquake, and people were pretty well devastated around here, tell me a little bit about what it took to start the first tower.
All it took was a decision. And they were going to move the town. And I was I'd been in Japan, they called me. I just got home. They was going to move this town. It was chaos. It had the earthquake, a major earthquake, you know, 1964. And I had four lots down here. I didn't have them all paid for, but I had four lots to buy them. And so I came down here without plans or anything, and I announced that I was going to build a Captain Cook Hotel, and I was going to open Tower 1 next June. And I built it, and the world helped me out. And I built it, and that's how I got started.
Going on, what other projects besides the hotel in construction were you involved in?
Well, basically shopping centers, Northern Lights, and I had a shopping center out here, 15K, and I had one out in Mountain View, still got that. And so I just looked for things that needed to be done. I hadn't done it before. I'd never been in the construction business before. But I did those things, and as I said before, ideas are more powerful than money. If you have ideas, make them happen. That's all you need.
Were you involved with AGC in any capacity at all?
Alaska General Contractors?
Yeah.
No. I started my own company, and just myself and my brother. He wasn't involved. He's a young kid I brought up here. Wasn't getting me 48. And I just started building. I had ideas, and I'd make it happen.
Didn't you also develop a lot of the homes in Turnagain?
Oh, yeah. I built over 250 houses out there. years later, yeah. I started building the one, and then I... And J.C. Morris and Marston owned that.
I was going to ask you to tell me about your partners in that.
Yeah, they I didn't make them partners in my company. They owned it, and I said, well, I'll buy some of those lots. But I said, I can't pay for them until I get the houses done. And so Morris, he said, well, I'll go with that. And Marston, he said, well, J.C. Morris will go for it, I'll go for it. And so I'd build the houses, went the houses done, I'd pay them for the lots.
How many years did that go on? There were quite a few projects.
Quite a few projects, yes. And then I'm trying to think, that was a big project, and I had some, I built some houses out of East K from Abel Pyle. I built 48 units out there, and I built Martin Manor. I had 40 units there. I just built them, you know, made it work.
Did you have any favorite projects that were fun to do and turned out to be successful?
Well, the most favorite project was after the earthquake when I was going to move the town. And I just left here for a visit, and I heard it was chaos up here. It was chaos. And I got back, and the town didn't, I'm not saying it's wrong, it didn't have any leadership saying this, we're going to solve it. They were just, it's chaos. And so I had four lots on 4th Avenue over here, didn't have them quite paid for. And without any plans, and it's a Saturday after the earthquake, I called a press conference out there and I said, I'm going to build a Captain Cook Hotel here, and I'm going to open up the first tower next year at this time. And this is an earthquake. I'm trying to think what day it was.
Friday. Good Friday.
Yeah, Good Friday. That's right. Anyhow, I got started that summer. And the world helped me out. I started building it, and people came over from London, so I called it the Captain Cook Hotel. And everybody helped me out. And so I got the Tower 1 done. And I built Tower 2, and I built Tower 3, and everybody kept helping me out. And that's all right. They're telling me to shut up.
No, it's my phone. I apologize for that. I didn't even remember I had it.
Well, anyhow, I had built lots of houses and stuff, but the Captain Cook out of England come on. And even when I opened this thing, Tower 1. A four-striper. The Queen of England said he sent a four-striper to Captain Cook when they opened it the next year. And the New York Times said if the Queen sends a four-striper to open up a hotel in Anchorage, Alaska, why wouldn't they send whatever shopping center in America? And they answered it. I didn't. Never anything about it. They said, we're honoring a man who is honoring one of our great men. And I called up the Captain Cook. And that thing was tremendous success, and the world helped me build it. I mean, if I needed anything, they helped me.
Based on the years you've been up here and things like that, what do you see the challenges of the industry going forward from here?
Construction, build for the future, understand that Alaska is the most unique state in the world. It's owned in common. That's hard to express. I had meetings on that again this morning about the commons. And I think I said that Alaska's owned in common. A lot of people don't understand that. And that means all the resources that are in government's hands shall forever stay in government's hands. And that made a lot of sense to me, because the government would understand the reality better than individuals. And I became a strong believer in that. That's why I was the second governor, and that's why I was the eighth governor, and stuff like that. And I didn't plan on being governor, and that's how I ended up as Secretary of the Interior. And made things happen.
Tell me a little more about what made you, or well, what you felt to run for governor the first time.
Well, and the governor, Alaska's a unique country, its own in common. And when they had, Steve McCutcheon at the Constitutional Convention they had before we were a state 50 some years ago. He said, if we get these things that people are talking about, like young Hickel is talking about the commons and stuff like that, we have to have a different kind of a governor. And so they withdrew all the facts out of the Constitution of the duties of the governor and gave our governor more power than any republic or state in the Union. And then it says, if he doesn't do a job, we've got to replace him. So I was the second governor to make these common things kind of go. Bill Egan was a good friend of mine. He was the first governor. And so I ran, he ran second time. I said, Bill, we're good friends. One of us is going to have to win. So I ran, I was elected, and that's how I got the owner state going. I took it to, and that's why Nixon insisted I become Secretary of Interior. And I said, I can't go back there. If you don't come back here, you'll never get that oil line or anything going, you know. And so that's how I became Secretary of Interior.
Tell me a little bit about your days as Secretary of the Interior working for Nixon.
Well, it was a unique thing. There's only 11 men in the cabinet, and none of them really understood the commons like I did. Everything was private, you know, in their. And so I had to take that across, and I won that battle, boy. And Nixon always supported me. Boy, he supported all those things I had to do.
After your time in Washington, then you came back to Alaska.
Yeah.
And then what did you participate in, or what did you?
Well, I'm trying to think. That was a bill with Captain Cook after the earthquake. And then I started building shopping centers, everything like that.
You mentioned Bill Egan was a friend of yours and whatnot. Didn't you two together start Commonwealth North?
Yes, yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, in fact, I just had a meeting on again this morning. I'm still fighting this thing. It's crazy. They don't understand that business doesn't own the country. Even this morning, I had a hell of a battle again after years. So tired, I was going to go back home and go to bed.
What are the issues they're discussing now?
Well, how do you make the country work? Well, if this isn't good for business, I said, the hell with the business. We are a business. We have to do things for the benefit of the total, and not some company, some individual, or some contractor. It's very different, and no one teaches that. And it's hard. See, the United States doesn't understand it. Russia understands it. China understands it. The world's owned in common. 84% of the world's owned in common. How many people know that? Does anybody here even teach about the uniqueness of Alaska? I get tired of that. I had a big meeting on that again last week. And the people of Alaska, well, the business, well, you can't do this because business won't do this. Business. I won't get into that more. It's just, and the media don't help me too much. I've been 50 years on this thing, teaching the commons. That's the reason Nixon took me to Washington. And I don't know. I don't know why the media doesn't, instead of listening to the APs out of some big city, and why we'll say, wait a minute, this is different. We are different. We own it. And like I said, 84% of the world's owned in common. And no one teaches that, not in America.
What specifically do you want to see done under that concept?
Our commons should be developed for the benefit of the region and its people, not some leader, some oligarch, or some company.
How would that happen, or how would that occur?
Well, that's the way we make it do it. That's Prudhoe Bay, how did that get going? They weren't going to drill. I told you that story.
Well, I don't know that
well,
story.
Well, They weren't going to, no one was going to drill. So I took Harry Jameson and Marco up to, and Robert Leonard was a good friend of mine. Went to Pluto Bay, 1968, I think it was. And they told me why they weren't going to drill. I said, Harry, drill or I will. He says, Governor, you will. And I said, you're goddamn right. It's our land, our oil, drill. And I announced there's 40 billion barrels of oil. I didn't go to school or anything. I had dyslexia and I couldn't read. That's another story. 10 years later, they called a press conference. They said, here to reconfirm what Governor Ekel said 10 years ago. There's 40 billion barrels of oil and we're going to get 100 out. And anyhow, but they haven't done anything. That whole Arctic is rich. But the reason they don't want to develop it, they can't own it. That's the reason they didn't want to drill here. And that's the fact. And they say, if government's in business, well, government shouldn't be in business. Well, who owns the oceans? You know, who owns space? I used to be on the National Space Board. And that was because I have vision more than anything. And there's asteroids up there the size of Rhode Island. 70% copper, and I came up with an idea of how to float those down in the Arctic or the Antarctic. And you wouldn't, the world wouldn't have to mine copper for 100 years. That Arctic is, I mean, the space is rich, I'm telling you, but we can't own it. And the business, and the United States and Central Europe basically thinks everything's run by business. Well, I've been trying to change that for a long time. I like business. I've made money in business. But you've got to understand the limits of business. And that's the reason Russia's a great believer, and so is China.
What did they do that we could do here?
They do it for the benefit of the total and not some company. And I'm going to, I was in China about a month ago. That's another story I tell you all about. China's a big country, but it's owned, it owns its resource. Russia, big as heck. I took this to Russia 40 years ago, and they understand it. But, you know, they say, oh, Russia, that's communism, that's communism, that's communism. Well, over here is democracy, democracy, and they screw a lot of people, too. They make it for their benefit, not the people's. And that's the difference. In 50 years or 100, the world, the UN's starting to see this. I took it to the UN in 1990. And Boutros-Ghali, my why war speech, I took this to Boutros-Ghali, and get a copy. I took it to the UN, and I said, why war? Wars are just big projects. Why not big projects? And the UN, boy, they really took that. And just now it's starting to catch on about the reality of the commons. And if we manage the commons for the benefit of the region's people instead of some leaders from oligarchs or some company, you could eliminate poverty from this earth. We used to have slavery, and finally Lincoln didn't like that, and he killed him, but after they killed him, they got rid of slavery. Well, now we got to go 40 hours a week. If we manage the commons for the benefit of the region's people, in space and every place, you could eliminate poverty, and you could make a decision when you wanted to work and when you didn't have to work. That's a fact. I took that to the UN. They never forgot it. And so ideas are, they're more powerful. Yeah, like, this is just one of them. I think there's a little pamphlet, another little pamphlet I just had published.
The one for China?
This is an old one, yeah. This is, why war? Why not big projects? And very simple little thing. It's a simple little book here, take it. And and then the other little project, the little book that I got out there, I took it to the UN, and Boutros-Ghali said they liked it. And They started taking it out 2 years ago. Let's see that. The Environment of Hope is a simple little thing. It'll show you their Secretary General rules for them. Just a simple little book. A man who is cold, hungry, and unemployed is an ugly environment. And then licked out. Show me any area of the world with the shortage of energy, and I'll show you basic poverty. These are just... And I don't fear an economic depression as much as I fear a depression of the spirit. And the first item on our agenda must be to create an environment of hope. Here, take this. That was written years ago. I've given it to the press. They don't do a damn thing with it. I think as far as I'm concerned, they can go to hell. Ideas, I'm taking my ideas. I've taken them around the world. But you can't get the economic interest of the United States to understand it. Even when I was in the cabinet, they didn't, you can't do that, you can't do that. Because, but Nixon supported it. The point I'm making, the reality of who owns the world is in the commons. But the United States doesn't teach that. I'm not mad at anybody, but that's the stuff I've been trying to teach around here for years.
Tell me a little bit more about the second time you ran for governor and what prompted you to do that.
Well, I ran the second, third, and fourth time and I couldn't even get through the primary. I ran for 12 years. I couldn't even get through the primary with the Republican Party. So I was in Scotland. I got a call on Thursday. The law says if a political party has been accepted, they can have their governor and lieutenant governor resign. They can appoint someone to run. And I got here on a Thursday, come back. I got on a plane, come back here on a Thursday night. And Friday, I went down to get all the papers and stuff ready. At 4 o'clock, I had everything done. And they signed it off. And 8 weeks later, I was elected as the only independence party in the history of the world. And their constitution says we were going to secede in the Union. I won that in an 8 week election and nothing. And the press didn't see anything there. The president saw it. So did Nixon. But the point I'm saying is that do things that you believe in and not what you think other people believe in. They crucified Jesus Christ. He died on the cross. He went to heaven or something like that. Because they couldn't believe him. I'm not saying that anything like that. But ideas are more powerful. But you got to have the guts to say it. And say, well, I want to be careful of that because I don't want to make somebody mad. Well, I don't want to make them mad either.
Have you asked him about the interhemispheric railway tunnel to Russia yet?
No. I didn't even know that was.
That
would be a good subject.
What's that?
The interhemispheric railway tunnel.
Yes, that came up this morning, Conville North. Yeah, I took it to the Russians, and we were going to build a railroad around the world. And Americans went crazy. Why? How could you ever build a railroad around the world? I said, well, I told you that story about Kissinger. I saw him. And I said, still, Henry, I can see it. Well, you go up to Nome, you're going to build a railroad. Russia's working on it again now. I was going out to St. Lawrence Island and over to Russia. Real simple. And take a railroad from Russia, from the bottom side of Russia there, go clear around the world. And what a wonderful thing. You cross the Bering Sea and you got a railroad around the world, North America, South America, the whole thing. And so, but ideas. You know, but Alaska has a problem. Since I got up here in 1940, I've been trying to sell the idea about the uniqueness. And I've taken it to all the top universities. I have 14 honorary degrees from some of the greatest universities. And I never went to school. You know that story because I had dyslexia. little town in Kansas, about 600 people, 500, had a little Catholic school, and taught by two sisters, each one 4 grades. And from the time I went to school, they couldn't figure out why I couldn't read. They didn't know what dyslexia was. And so one of those sisters, two of them, read to me 1 hour a day a school year, you know, during school. And that was my education. You know what the book they used to read out of? The Old Testament. And the Old Testament says, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. The New Testament gets it into language like that. They read me the Old Testament, and I could remember that. I could remember everything, but I couldn't read. And I still remember it. And that's my education. And I've got honorary degrees from colleges out of 14 universities. So you don't have to go to school to get it. You've got to have common sense. And be sure you say what you believe in, and don't say, well, I think this, because I don't want to make somebody mad. I don't give a shit about that. And right. Russia liked it. I took it to Russia. They loved it.
They did. Yeah. What was their reaction to it?
They liked the idea of the commons. And I'll never forget Ronald Reagan, when he was president. I knew him. He called it the evil empire. And I went to see him. I said, Ronald, that's not an evil empire. Go look at it. I've been all through that country. They've taken me by railroad 7 days once halfway across it. I said, it's like a big family. It's not an evil empire. The only reason you're called an evil empire is so you can get some military buildup around it, you know. I told him that. That's a historical fact. Russia knows it. Now Russia's moving. She's moving. And I'll have the... I think they were in here...
Just a few days ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they come meet with me to say how the things going, and they're great. But do you think the President of the United States or anybody do that? Oh, the evil empire. I'm bullshit.
Do you have any others?
It's all happened. It's all. I've been up here for 50 years. I've written books about it. Who owns America? There it is. I don't write it. I just dictate it and they print it. That was a national bestseller. It's the only one written in Alaska that's ever a national bestseller. I raised the question, who owns America? Well, we do, not some company. And then I wrote the book. I haven't published. I've published it, but I haven't got it. But this one here. I was so busy. Crisis in the Commons, Alaska Solution. And it's Mike Wallace and the Supreme Court of NATO, General Ralston wrote some things, and Dick Fisher, Buzz Aldrin, the crisis of the commons. Well, the commons are in a crisis because our economic interest doesn't think government should get involved in the crisis. Well, who owns the oceans? Who owns space? Who owns all this stuff? General Motors? No. And so I wrote a book called The Crisis of the Commons. And Russia took 10,000 of these and put them in Russian, put them in there in Russian language. One in every school. In America, they don't give a darn. So I just sat down and wrote that in a few months. And when I talk about the crisis of the commons and the Alaska solution.
What's the solution?
Well, manage your commons for the benefit of the total and not some company, some economic or something. Pluto Bay, what the hell is that? It belongs to us. And I do that, and does anybody in your media or anything tell the story? They don't say that. The crisis of the commons is they don't tell the facts. Who owns the commons? We do. And the space is rich as hell. That's the reason I was on the National Space Board. It's all owned in common. Who owns the oceans? I'll never forget. Second day I was Secretary of Interior. I got a call. Santa Barbara had a blowout out there. And I went out there, flew out there. This is the second day of secondary. I said, what the hell happened here? Well, they said, we had a blowout. Well, I says, I'm shutting you down. They says, you governor, you can't shut us down. I was secretary then. I says, what do you mean I can't? I'm shutting you down right now. And I shut them down. And they went to court and they lost it. They found out, well, who owns the commons? The United States government didn't believe, we can't do that, we can't do that, we can't do that. I was Secretary of the Interior and I did it. Changed the world. This is all a historical fact.
Governor Hickel, when they were first working towards statehood, the people in Alaska were going to settle for just 3 million.
That's acres. Exactly right. I'll tell that story.
What did you decide?
It was 19... When was the first year I went to Washington? Truman was president. 1952. A statehood bill had passed the House. Gave us 3 million acres of land out of nearly 365 million acres. And no one said a word. I'm a kid. We're just working with my hands. I got mad. I yelled, and I'm the kind of a kid not afraid to talk to anything. I said, 3 million acres? This isn't going to work. It's going to work. So I went back to Washington. It took me a long time. I flew to Chicago and I could train from Chicago to Washington. And I got there and Taft said he'd see me. He's the head of the Senate. And Eisenhower was president. I had taken it to Truman first ahead of time. And I says, they're trying to make the state there. And I told them this story. And they didn't know anything about it. And finally Taft says, well, young man, how much land do you think you need? I blurted out 100 million acres. They'd only given us 3 and already passed the House to make it a state. And up here, Bob Atwood, over the time, took me on, Hickles Eccles. No one give a damn. They weren't going to fight it. And I took it to the top guys. And I'm trying to think now. I'm in Washington. And, the 100 million acres. I said, 100 million. And so when I said this, Senator Welker from Idaho was the guy taking me around. I was just a kid, but I was demanding to see the president, and I'd seen Truman, Eisenhower. And he said, well, young man, how much land do you think you need? And I blurted out 100 million acres. And I told Welker, I said, I wonder how much land we have. He didn't say anything. He walked over to the phone, just a short ways away, picked up the phone, called Interior Department. He says, you're okay. You've got nearly 400 million acres up there. I said, I should have asked for half. But we were going to become a state, and even Bob Atwood, he was a pretty good friend of mine, ran the Anchorage Times, took me on something called Hickles Eccles, Hickles Eccles. He doesn't think we have. And they were going to settle for 3 million acres. And not a goddamn person in Alaska thought that. Well, this is, the press didn't even say anything. They said, we don't want to make them mad. That's how we got 103 million acres. I wish I'd asked for half of it. That's what happens. But, you know, it's happening yet today. They don't do anything about it. They don't. You see, Russia understands the commons. China understands the commons. And the world kind of understands it. But the United States and the London part of that part of the European, they think economics runs everything. I don't say there's anything wrong with that, but they don't own it. And that's why I wrote The Crisis of the Commons. And that's why I've taken these things like that. And everything I told you is true.
Did you and Bob Atwood go back to Washington a lot for lobbying for statehood after that?
After that, Bob Atwood saw it. Well, he saw the problem. And he saw the top leaders saying, Mr. Hickel, you're right. You're going to get that 100 million acres. And then we did. That's how we got it. And Bob Atwood finally went along, and his wife was the one that said, Bob, you've got to listen to that young man. My God, The president listened to me. But this is a problem that the media's gotten stuff. They don't really fight our commons enough. That's the reason I told the Alaska people, you know, we shouldn't elect our people Republicans and Democrats. We should elect them as Alaskans. When I was governor the last time, in my inaugural address, I said, I am not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not an independent, I'm an Alaskan. I said that as governor, I was elected in 5 weeks election. That happened, that's the truth. But what'd the press say? Not a thing. I'm not bawling you out, I'm just saying the truth. That's all I'm saying. And I've taken it, I've been on 60 Minutes twice, and Mike Mullins was a great friend of mine. He said, keep telling your story. I said, Mike, I don't have the time to fly back here and do those things. And I've been on all the national programs, but Mike Mullins had me on 60 Minutes 3 different times. And
What were the subjects?
Basically, the commons, Alaska, and all that stuff, and uniqueness. See, we're up here. There's a map I had made that's just nothing like it. That's north of 60. Well, there's nothing in the United States north of 60. When I tell them that, even the teachers don't understand that. So I had that map made, and look at Iceland over there. See that little corner over there, Iceland? I'll show you. I'll tell you what happened. Here's Iceland.
There's Iceland. Pardon me. And there, you see that? There's
the president of Iceland. See him right there? That's the president of Iceland. He called me. He didn't me. I didn't have anything. He says, Governor, you got to come overseas. He says, you've got to let us in the northern border. We're a country. Nobody recognizes as a country. So I put them in there, and now they belong to Northern Forum. But here, there's Iceland, you see. And this is north of 60. It's an unknown country. It's the richest country in the world. And the resources are just absolutely unbelievable. Russia knows it. That's the reason she planted that flag down there 2 miles under the sea about 2 months ago. And I totally support that. Someone's got to own it. That's why Alaska in the commons owns that stuff. But there, that in this next 100 years, this is going to change the world. The commons are going to be owned. And
tell me a little bit about the Northern Forum and what it does.
Well, I put together the Northern Forum to try to get the idea of the uniqueness of the North. We just got through having a big meeting on that again. They had part of it this morning. A lot of people that live in the United States, they don't believe in the Northern Forum. They said, you know, you guys shouldn't be in business. Public shouldn't be in business. Well, you ought to have heard me tell them what I just told them. It's what happens when a bull has to go to the toilet. I told him, bullshit. Well, it's the truth. Who owns that? And that's what this book is. Read the book. I'll give you a copy of it. Mike Wallace made a comment on this book. General Joe Ralston, Buzz Aldrin, I know them all. They said, hey, this is a great book. They wanted to write some comments on it. People of Alaska, bullshit. It'll make me mad. I don't care.
What are your other issues? What other things are you dealing with now, other issues? The Northern Forum and the Commonwealth. Are there other?
No, I've taken.
Institute of the North.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the new DVD that's coming out.
Yeah. Here's one you could go. Look here. This is This is Iceland. This is tells the story about the Institute. That's me. This tells, it's this one, managing director Bell Nels. That's founder's letter. Simple little book. You own Alaska. Various people. There's a Eisenhower right there. That's Palin. That's Vic Fisher. That's me. I mean, this. I do a lot of this stuff. Arctic Energy Summit. Boy, that's an important one. We've had that in. The Energy Summit shows all the people up there. Everybody except the American governments. Arctic Transportation Telecommunications. Alaska Dialogue, North Star Award. Robert O. Anderson Award. Iceland's president. He asked me if he'd get in a Northern Forum. I pointed at ANILCA, Fisheries, the Independent Audit Reports, Security and Defense, all this stuff there. This is just stuff real, real well done. Here, I'll give you, take that. I put all that stuff in Alaska, and I've been doing it for years, but, you know. If I was out there and screwed somebody else's wife, it'd be headlines. But if I do something with people,
What are you going to do with your next 20 years?
Well, I'll be, next 20 years, I'll be 109. And I've already got it figured out. If I get up to heaven, I'm going to tell St. Peter, if you don't have a spot for me, send me back. I'm not through yet. I've got that all figured out. Okay. I'm going to do it.
But in the meantime, have you got any other plans and projects that you're
Well, I've taken it around the world, taken it to Africa, South America, Australia, Japan, Korea, China, Russia. The Russians had their top people here last week, wasn't it?
Yes, from Sohar.
Yes, yeah. And they meet with me. They don't go meet with the President of Washington.
What are they doing or what are they promoting over there?
Oh, they're trying to make Alaska like their country, like Alaska, and I'm trying to make my country like they are. The commons, see. They're all of them, and I've been all through Russia. They've taken me, man, one time they took me through Russia. I was seven, I think I told you the story. They put me out, my wife and I, on a train here about 5 years ago or more, down to the very southern part of Russia. We was on that train 7 days and seven nights. They had one car. We slept in the car, nice place to eat, nice place to stay. 7 days and seven nights. We were only halfway through Russia. They took me there and flew me over to Yakutia, those places where I wanted to go. That's a tremendous country. It's like a family. It's not an evil empire. It is like a family.
How so?
Well, they all help each other. They believe in each other. It's like a family. Like in Alaska, God, if you do the wrong kind of thing, and they think you're in business, and you shouldn't be, you're in government, get out of that thing. I don't know, you're not supposed to do blah, 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 blah. I'm tired of that stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking we're probably.
What?
Any final thoughts?
Any final comments on challenges in the future that you see?
Yeah, I'm trying to educate the media to help me out. I'm so tired of sending this stuff. That hell, I'm 89 years old yesterday, and I'm still preaching to everybody. I need help.
And
I published three books. That one. That was a national bestseller. This and I just didn't have time to do it. And here's one here.
Which DVD are you talking about?
We've just created a DVD called You Own Alaska, and it's a message that'll be
hey, look
shared
at this.
With the youth of Alaska.
Here's the one the Russians put in. Made 10,000 copies of them. That's a Russian one.
Here's those two other books, sir.
Yeah. And then I wrote The Wit and Wisdom of Wally Hickel, and this one. This is a national bestseller. But that one, look at that. And they published in Russia. Russia thinks the idea is good. America says, oh, hell no.
Well, thank you very much.
Well,
appreciate your time.
I tell you, I've got every kind of stuff here people want to help on. And but the main thing is, if we could get it to the people of the United States, and like I said, I've taken 60 minutes, Mike Wallace had me on there. Unless the media is really trying to help you, it's too damn tough. Because America is a media thing. Now I'm taking it, what are we doing out here now in the schools? Aren't we trying to get...
Yes, we're going to get a message out. We'll be tied in with youth campaigns, Rock the Vote, the Anchorage School District, the Alaska School Boards. Mm-hmm. It's a message that will go out far and wide, and we'll talk about statehood.
We're talking about the reality of Alaska. They don't teach it.
Article 8, mineral rights. And responsibility, along with ownership, comes responsibility.
That's right. Yes. There's no books in the schools that even talk about the commons. They think that's communistic.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.